We're joined by Bruce Williamson from the Rail Future, an independent organisation campaigning for better rail services for passengers. Ben Southwood is from the Adam Smith Institute, a libertarian think tank named after one of the founders of modern economics. And Ellie Harrison is from the campaign group Bring Back British Rail. My thanks to you all for joining us this morning. Ben, if I may start with you, should we renationalise the railways, do you think?
I think it's a step in the wrong direction. I think there's lots of things we could do to improve the rail network in general and the institutional framework for rail in particular. But I think that British Rail was 80 years of failure for whatever reason, perhaps not just because it was a state-run organisation, but it coincided with failure. And so I think it would be a step in the wrong direction.
The points that you make where improvements could be made, where would they be then if renationalisation is not an option? Where can we improve on privatisation?
Yeah, well, I think that's a hard question. So I think it's very easy to point to things which won't work, but it's harder to point to things that, which will work. It might be that we want a situation like before 1914, where we had track and train run by the same company. So you have regional monopolies, that might work. Or we might want a system which has proper competition, so you compete on the rail. It's hard to see which of these things would work well because we don't have good experiments telling us, but maybe there should be experiments to tell us.
Ellie Harrison, you heard there from Ben. He doesn't think that renationalising the railways is the right step, and yet you campaign with the group Bring Back British Rail. Why should BR come back then?
Well, the Bring Back British Rail campaign, it's been running for 6 years now, and I think it's important to understand where I'm coming from, because I'm coming from the perspective of a passenger, and I was motivated to start this campaign from the frustrations of trying to travel around the country on so many different franchises run by different train operating companies. And it was purely from that standpoint. It was actually, I used to live in Nottingham, just down the road from where you guys are.
Yep.
And I moved up to Scotland. And doing that journey between Nottingham and Glasgow required me to travel on three different franchises. And it was actually exactly 6 years ago. It was January, and I was making that journey. And the first franchise is the East Midlands Trains, which I'm sure you know well. And I was sat on that train, and it was chugging along very, very slowly, and I had a connection to meet to get on the then National Express, which is obviously now the East Coast and soon to be run by Branson again. And nobody on the East Coast train seemed to care about this connection. There was no communication between the different franchises. And as a result, I missed my connection, and I was over 2 hours late on that occasion. And that wasn't, a rarity. Those sorts of delays were happening to me all the time.
Ellie, you talk there about long-distance travel, and you talk about the lack of joined-up thinking between train operating companies. And there is a point there. For day-to-day commuters, though, who may travel on one line, or certainly with one company, how do you think that their service has done after privatisation?
Well, I mean, I have a similar experience now that I'm in Scotland, that all of the local trains are run by ScotRail, so I'm really relying on ScotRail to get to work. And in Scotland, we're lucky that our government is regulating fares a lot tighter than what's happening down in England. But what I find really frustrating is the complex ticketing system, and obviously the overpriced tickets. So to get to work, I work in Dundee. I have to book my tickets 3 months in advance to be able to get the cheapest fare, which makes it an affordable commute. And I've heard similar stories from people all around the country who are really frustrated by the completely absurd ticketing system that we have as a result of trying to create a market, which is what's happened as a result of privatization, in a natural monopoly. I mean, all you get is absurd innovation.
Okay.
Like, all of these ridiculous ticket prices.
Ellie, stay with me, because I want to bring in Bruce Williamson, who's from Rail Future, an independent organisation campaigning for better rail services for passengers. Do you have sympathy with the points raised there by Ellie, Bruce?
Yeah, certainly. I think the rail fares point, we do have a ridiculously complex ticketing structure, which doesn't help passengers get the good deal. And, the level of tickets is too high. I certainly don't agree that British Rail was 80 years of failure. I mean, British Rail only existed for 45 years. And the main problem with British Rail was that it was starved of investment. And British Rail actually did a very, very good job of running a railway on an absolute shoestring budget. They weren't given the resources that equivalent railways on the continent were given. So,
would that mean then that if we brought British Rail back that we'd see an improved service, do you
think? Not necessarily. I mean, it's academic anyway, because it simply isn't going to happen. The Conservatives, are re-privatising the...
Well, yeah, they are, but Labour have flirted with the idea. I mean, last year they were flirting with the idea, weren't they? They were suggesting that possibly they'd look at re-nationalising parts of the railways, at least.
Well, you remember that John Prescott, under the last Labour government, promised that we'd have a state-owned, state-run railway, and he didn't deliver. I think it would be easy for Labour to simply leave it as it is. Would it be better? I don't know. There certainly is a problem with the privatised rail network, in that there's a complex level of different contractors and different organisations, all, of course, who have to take their profit, and they all have to sort of do contracts with other organisations. So that level of bureaucracy that privatisation has brought in has certainly added costs to the railway network. Overall, going back to when rail was privatised, we were of the view that if you were going to privatise, it would be better to privatise it as a whole. And I certainly agree that integrating track and rail is one of the problems that we don't have integrated track and rail. And integrating track and rail, naturally they go hand in hand, would result in more efficient railways.
So what does that mean then?
Well, it means either that they're owned by the same organisation and run in tandem. There are some efforts being made to sort of...
Because the rail's run by Network Rail, and then the train operating companies run on the rail, owned by Network Rail. So are you saying that, say, take for our area, for example, East Midlands Trains would own that stretch of rail track? Is that right, between here and London?
That may cause other problems, but that would work well for East Midlands Trains. The problems we fear with that is that the freight operators then become second-class citizens on the railway, and they struggle to get freight paths. I mean, the freight is actually one of the big successes of privatisation, and the amount of freight travelling by rail has gone up and up and up. But obviously, you need to find a deal that works well for freight and for passengers.
Yeah. Let me bring you back, Ben. I'm curious to get your take on the investment that's been made in the railway since privatisation, because, it is fair to say, isn't it, that money has been spent on improvements, on improving services. I mean, you look at East Midlands Trains here across Leicestershire and Rutland, and, we've seen improvements and upgrades to stations such as Leicester and Derby and in the East Midlands. They've performed well, of course, with their punctuality and that kind of thing. So, improvements have been made, haven't they?
Yeah, so I would say that the most interesting chart you can look at is the chart of passenger numbers over the 20th century. So you have a completely private system to 1913 odd, and then you get you're on about 1.5 billion passenger journeys a year. And then between 1913 and 1947, you get degrees of state involvement and state control, but not nationalisation, and it bounces around about that number. Between 1945 and 1995, the number of passenger journeys falls from 1.5 billion a year to 750 million odd. And now since 1995, we've had that double back up to where it was 100 years ago. Now, I'm completely open to the possibility that this is purely due to, once it's gone private, more investment has been done, and that's what's driving the huge uptick. But I think it's so striking that we should consider the possibility that maybe you can only do this kind of investment when maybe it's only politically possible to put this kind of money into the railways when they're private, or maybe the only way you can get fares that will start supporting the investment in the network when it's private. I don't know if that's true, but it seems it's so striking that the recovery has been in passenger journey yeah. since 1995. That there seems like there's something going on.
But those passengers will tell you that although they're going on those trains, they're squeezed on those trains. They can't get seats. The trains are overcrowded. So it may well be that there's more journeys being made, but the actual level of the service hasn't increased, has it?
Well, the satisfaction numbers are about the same, sometimes up, sometimes down. Now, I don't know exactly how they calculate these. Maybe they don't represent actual people's experiences, but maybe they do. I tend to think that, you know, I've got my own anecdotal experiences. I commute into London every day until 6 weeks ago, that's hard. But maybe the data is the true story we should look at, and if that's saying things are about the same, then maybe things are about the same.
You're listening to BBC Radio Leicester. It's 10:21. Jonathan Lampon here with you. We're talking about would it be right to renationalise the railways? Of course, transport is high on the agenda. This general election, of course, coming up in just 4 months' time. Just over 4 months, isn't it? 5 months, I suppose, if you take into account the whole of May. But we're curious to get a take on renationalising. A lot of talk has been made about privatisation of the railways. Was it the right thing to do? Labour in the past have flirted with the idea of renationalising the railways. As I say, transport very high on the agenda. And today, or certainly in the new year, rail fares have gone up by 2.5% across the country. Might not sound huge, but when you take into account that that's 20% over the last 5 years, a lot of people are now saying, what are we paying for? My guests this morning are Ben Southwold from the Adam Smith Institute, a libertarian think tank named after one of the founders of modern economics. Bruce Williamson is from Future Rail, an independent organisation campaigning for better rail services for passengers. And Ellie Harrison is from the campaign group Bring Back British Rail. Ellie, we've been hearing about the trials and tribulations you face trying to get trains across the country, but fares essentially is a big one for commuters, isn't it? It's the fact that fares have gone up by 20% and people don't feel that the service has improved by, you know, almost a quarter.
Exactly. I mean, I want to disagree with what Bruce said about the fact that he thinks that it's never going to happen, that we're going to be able to take our railways back into public ownership. And it's not just me that is pushing this agenda. Today is a day of action for public ownership, and there's thousands of people up and down the country standing outside stations.
Caroline Lucas from the Green Party, in fact, is at a station we wanted to speak to her this morning, but she's too busy campaigning outside a rail station today.
Exactly. Caroline Lucas is down in Brighton. We've got the leader of the Green Party, Natalie Bennett, outside King's Cross Station. And there are literally thousands of people outside stations all around the country. And what I've witnessed over the last 6 years running Bring Back British Rail is how momentum is building. Like, more and more people are realising that we're being ripped off by this privatised system, and that actually we need to get over the ideology that put privatisation into place, and to go back to a much simpler, much fairer system where the passengers who use the trains and rely on the trains, and as Ben's pointed out, it's a growing number of people who rely on the trains, so that they come first and they get a better deal. And it's the data, which Ben referred to, is all there. The privatised system is wasting, through its inefficiency and its fractured nature, wasting £1.2 billion pounds a year.
To renationalise, Ellie, is going to cost billions, though, isn't it?
No, that's not actually true. I mean, the way that the railways are set up is that each of the different franchises for the different routes is only given to a private company for a certain length of time. And when that franchise comes to an end, the only thing that is stopping the government taking it back into public ownership is the Dysfunctional Railways Act of 1993, which paved the way for privatisation. And in Scotland, where I live, the Smith Commission, which is going on at the moment to give Hanmore power to Scotland, is looking at amending the Railways Act of 1993 so that Scotland can take its railways back into public ownership.
Right.
The tide is definitely turning.
All right,
what
Ellie.
Happens in Scotland should be...
Okay.
an influence for the rest of the country.
Bruce, I want to look closer to home, and I want to look at Leicester, and I know you don't have the figures there. Well, you may well do,
no,
actually,
I'm afraid
but don't worry, because I've got them here. Let's look at East Midlands Trains. Now, this is from November 2014, so not that long ago. It shows that for the year end, April 26, 2014, turnover from ticket sales and extras such as the catering, advertising and onboard Wi-Fi increased slightly to £349 million. Profits leapt on East Midlands Trains from £14.8 million to £21.6 million. Now, East Midlands Trains has been the UK's most punctual long-distance train operator for the past 4 years. And in the last year, we know that obviously investment's been made at Derby, Nottingham and here in Leicester, at Leicester Railway Station 2. When we look at the pay of the top earners, the managing director is David Horn. His pay actually slipped from £375,000 to £272,000. I know you could still say that's a heck of a lot, but that was because of performance-related pay. Now, you take an overview like that of East Midlands Trains, and you could say that, you know, they have brought investment, they have paid the price of when they've not performed, and money is being made and will continue to be reinvested. That's an example of a well-run train operating company, isn't it?
Well, yeah, to some extent that may be the case. I mean, let's not forget that the major investment projects, though, are paid for by the government. They're not paid for by
the train. They are. And we should just point out, in 2012, £46 million of taxpayers' money had to be given to East Midlands Trains because they were in dire straits. So, you know, it's not...
Yeah, it seems like it's heads or win, tails you lose, isn't it, for the train operating companies themselves. I just want to go back to Ellie's point, actually. You know, maybe the tide is turning. There's some research I saw today, actually, which shows that there is an overwhelming majority in favour of renationalisation. And interestingly, even amongst Conservative supporters, it's 50-50. And I know the Welsh government want to take their railways back into state ownership. The problem is, though, that people such as Ben and the Adam Smith Institute and the Conservative Party are driven by ideology. They say, look, private is best no matter what the evidence tells us. And similarly, the trades unions will say, well, look, nationalisation is best no matter what the evidence tells us. Now, we had an example recently where East Coast was in national hands. It was a state-owned company. And that was giving us a benchmark to compare state ownership versus the private sector. But because it's now being re-privatised, we've lost that benchmark. And what we need is an evidence-driven policy, not an ideologically driven policy on this.
I think I saw some figure about it brought £1 billion in for the Treasury. Isn't that right?
It certainly brought hundreds of millions into the Treasury. It was certainly an earner for the paying money. It was subsidising the taxpayer. So that's obviously a good thing.
Let me come back to you, if I may, Ben. Sorry, not Ben. Sorry, apologies. If I may come back to you, Bruce. If I can, Bruce, obviously there from Rail Future. But Ben, if I can just ask you about this ideology that Bruce has mentioned there. I mean, it is slightly ideological to say that, you know, everything's okay and there can't be some changes, isn't it?
I don't necessarily think so. I agree with Bruce that if the evidence suggests that we should take the railways back into state ownership, then we should do that. We should always do what the evidence suggests.
Do you think we need tougher
policy regulation?
Do you think that's the problem here? Is that they're not all operating the same way? I've given some examples there of East Midlands Trains and the investments they've made, but, you know, even they have their faults.
Within the system we have, which is... You've privatised a very specific aspect, and in a very specific way, it might be the case that you need... regulations to control how they use that. It's not like a normal competitive system where you need certain framework of regulations, but mostly it works itself. It's a bit different than that. You might need more intrusive regulations to make things work, like having the four fare system, which at least to me seems to have improved on the previous fare system. But no, I think that Bruce is right that you should always go where the evidence takes you. And as I said before, I think that we want to look at where you have tested certain different frameworks for running railways. It's very hard to run controlled experiments on railways, but you can certainly look at the kinds of things, and directly operated railways on the East Coast Main Line is one piece of evidence you'd want to look at when you were deciding what to do with the railways.
Let me ask you this then. Let me come to all of you on this question. Renationalising the railways, do you see it happening in the next government, whoever that government may well be? What do you think?
Well, I'll say I don't think it's going to happen.
Short but sweet there, Ben. Thank you for that. Bruce, what do you think?
I think it might happen partially. I think you know, we might see things happening in Wales and Scotland. And if Labour get in, I don't think they'll bite the bullet. I think they'll just leave it as is.
So in England, no change?
No.
Okay, interesting. And Ellie, what do you think? I mean, obviously you'd like to see it, but I know you're an optimist, but you're obviously a realist as well, aren't you?
Well, I'm an optimist, otherwise I wouldn't have been doing this for the last 6 years. And I have seen the tide turning, and I believe that, you know, the latest polls say that more than 90% of the British public support the renationalisation of the railways.
Yeah, but will it happen in the next government? That's the question.
Well, we need to see who gets elected first, but it would be a massive vote winner, and it just takes one of the parties to come out and have the guts to make it their policy.
We will see what happens. Ellie, really good to talk to you. Thank you very much indeed. Thanks to all my guests this morning. Ben Southwood there from the Adam Smith Institute, Bruce Williamson from Rail Future, and Ellie Harrison from the campaign group Bring Back British Rail.